for prayer. It's truly been a wonderful convention. I've enjoyed it very much, enjoyed the sweet fellowship and the discourses. And we also, Sister Nancy and I also would like to thank Sister Erna and Brother Wally for opening their home to us and the warm fellowship that we have had in their home. Last Saturday, I brought the loving greetings of our brethren in our home ecclesia, Northwest Indiana. But I have this love that I want to bring to you. It's love that was given to us many months ago, but I think it's still a love that they want still to be conveyed. And this is the wonderful love and greetings of our dear brethren from India. And I appreciate very much their sincerity. And our thoughts for this morning are going to be dealing with those dear brethren. And the title of our talk is going to spend some time just reviewing some of these ties that bind us from the brethren in India, and they're just an example of many of the brethren around the world, that we have this close Christian tie that, you know, the world just does not understand. You know, before I begin, I'll just relate to a story. Not that you're falling asleep already, but just to relate a quick story here, that when several years ago we went to Cairo as part of a group trip, and as we were getting ready to leave, some of the security people at LL were doing a lot of interviews with the different passengers to do some security checks. And one person came over to me and pulled me out of the line, and I said, do you want my wife to come with me? And he said, no, I want just to talk to you only. And the person started asking me a bunch of questions. And one of the questions, which I didn't really think about, was, how do you know all these people on this trip? All these people from various cities, how do you know them? And you know, I'm thinking about, you know, just reflecting now upon that question, is that, you know, the Christian community, they have fellowship with their own church members. And that's a nice fellowship, and some have grown to be very nice. But usually it's quite limited. And if they had to go traveling across country and they would call up someone of their own faith in a town, would they necessarily be welcomed in their home, unknown guest? I would say probably not. Maybe yes, but probably not in most cases, because people are leery of people, even in their own relationships of religious matters. But if you call up a brother or a sister that you had never met before, and you say, you know, I'm brother so-and-so from Northwest Indiana, and you say, I'd like to spend a little time with you. They open their home to you. They invite you in for a meal. They invite you to stay. And you feel like they are relatives, like they're long-lost relatives. They're just glad to have you there. And that is a tie, that's a binding that the Christian community just does not have or cannot feel. And I think that's such a blessing. And to me, coming out of the non-assistance, I never had that close relationship. But having developed this fond love for all the brethren, I've grown to appreciate this tie that binds. Let's begin with a text, 1 John, the first chapter. First John, first chapter, starting with the first verse. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our own eyes, which we have looked upon and touched with our hands concerning the word of life, the life was made manifest, and we saw it, and testified to it, and proclaimed to you the eternal life which was with the Father and was made manifest to us. That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, so that you may have fellowship with us, and our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ, and we are writing this that our joy may be complete. You know, our opportunities to share of our life experiences with our brethren is very important. And that's one of the reasons why I appreciate testimony meetings. And our opportunities to share of our experiences with the brethren around the world is an opportunity to bring them to you. And I felt compelled. I was going to talk about something else this morning, but a couple of days ago when talking to several here, I felt compelled that I should spend maybe this hour talking about the brethren in India. You know, it's our responsibility as we walk up this narrow way to reach this fourth quarter mark. But we realize that we don't walk alone, do we? There's many that has been called, and each one of us have that responsibility, not only for ourselves in this walk, but to encourage everyone that is walking in the same walk of consecration. And through our experiences with our brethren, we get to learn how to, we get to know them, we get to know about how to pray for them, we get to learn how to encourage them, and most important, we get to know who our brethren are, and we get this opportunity to develop this love for them, especially for the whole household of faith. You know, we are ambassadors for Christ. And how can we be ambassadors? Well, we're ambassadors when we go from one class to the next and we bring that class's love and greetings, don't we? And we take that love and greetings back to our class. It's like when we go to a convention, we bring the love and greetings of our class to the convention, and we return with that love and greetings. Well, we do the same thing with our brethren when we go overseas. I'd like to turn to another text. It's found in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. Second Thessalonians, the second chapter, we're going to be reading verses 16 and 17. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and our God, our Father, who loved us and gave us eternal comfort and good hope through grace, comfort your hearts and establish them in every good work and word. Truly God has blessed us greatly, and he has given us this great message of comfort and hope. And it's encouraging to see that this comfort and hope that we have is not limited to our class or even to part of the country. It's provided for all around the world who will receive it. And our mission, when we went, was to take this love and this encouragement to our brethren, wherever we go. And it's interesting to see that they also are encouraging of us. You know, we think, well, we know of their circumstances and how they have to deal with the Hindu religion, which is 80% of the population is Hindu, and about 17% of it's Islamic, only 3% or so is Christian, and the majority of that's Catholic, and a few others. But their influences, their outside influences, are quite different from us, and they need encouragement. But what's interesting, though, is that they're concerned about us as well, and they constantly remind us that we are in their prayers, and that gives us a lot of strength as well. When we go to any place, we go to a convention, or we go to meet some brethren, do we go with a closed mind, a closed book? No, we don't. We open our minds and our books to understand these brethren that we go to meet. And by our fellowship, through asking questions, answering questions, discussions, and so forth, we gain an understanding and appreciation of their understanding of the truth. And we fill in our understanding in this open book and appreciate their viewpoints. And we know that we're all striving to understand. That's why we're called Bible students. We're not called Bible teachers. But we're all striving to learn and understand. Brother we met, Brother Thomas, and we had some discussions in his home, and there were two different views that was being discussed in his home, and when we got done, we didn't reach a conclusion, but we all agreed on the discussion that was good. And this dear brother, whose home we were in, talking about this particular matter, said, you know, summed it up very well in that he said, all I want is to be a good student. And that's why all we are trying to do is be a good student, to learn, to continue to grow in what we understand, to prove all things. Now, I appreciate one of the examples that was brought out to this weekend in convention is that the example of the bushel basket and the candle. And if that candle, if our association is only limited to our ecclesia, how broad of experience do we get to know of the brethren beyond our ecclesia? It's important, I think, in my opinion, is for us to have associations with all the brethren and to let our shine as it is available and sees fit. You can imagine what it had been like if Apostle Paul never wrote a letter about Timothy or to Timothy. How much would we have missed about Timothy's character and the encouragement to Timothy? Or how about Titus? How about the Galatians or those at Philippi? All these letters were given to us as a means to convey their life experiences and what things they were struggling with. And I think it's valuable for us at times to have discourses that talks about the brethren's situation to help us round out our life experiences as new creatures. So what I'd like to do for you this morning is to take that book that we have written all of our experiences from India and open that book and share it with you. One of the things that I really appreciate in our travels to the different ecclesias in India was that each time we go to ecclesia, they always have a welcoming address. And they would always give us a greeting. And as one example of a greeting that was given to us is, quote, "We give thanks to our God upon every remembrance of you, always in every day, prayers, making requests for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Christ Jesus. Kindly carry our love and greetings to the brethren in Florida, Chicago, Seattle, New Jersey, New York, Portland, California, Los Angeles, all through the United States. Let us glory even in our trials and tribulations, for they work out everything good for our salvation. Narrow is the way, straight is the gate. By faith, we are ever ready for our fate." That says a lot, doesn't it? Now, I mentioned a little bit about the background of the country of India and their population is about a billion people in a size of a country that's one-third of the United States. And the Hindu religion is a very prominent religion there. In a mountain town called Wellington, Brother George, one of the elders, has his home. But just outside of his home, just outside of his gate, is a Hindu shrine. And you can imagine every day going to his home and coming back, he has to see these worldly influences. But does this shrine discourage him? No, it encourages him. Because what he has is better and more sure word of truth than what they believe. One of the first towns we went to was Bombay. And in Bombay we had a chance to meet Brother Barsa. And it's interesting to note that Brother Carl was there many years before, and we got to see the photos of Brother Carl's visit and meet his dear wife and his daughter and their family. It's a small little class, and it's an isolated class from the rest of India. But Brother Barsa is very zealous in trying to spread the word as best he can. A little background about him in that somewhere around 1971, 72, Brother S.R. Gilbert was found sleeping in a railroad station on a bench. And he was on a pilgrim trip. And Brother Barsa's father saw Brother Gilbert. And he ended up talking to him. And he was encouraged by what Brother Gilbert had to say. And he invited Brother Gilbert to come to his house. Well, Brother Gilbert ended up staying for 3 months. Does that sound like some experiences that maybe Apostle Paul went through? Yes. Language is a big issue in India. There are many different dialects. And Brother Barr says, has translated the first volume into Marathi, and is planning to print, I don't know if he has completed this, but he was planning to print 1,000 copies of the first volume and distribute this information. He also sends out information that he receives from Don and other information. He tries to witness where he can. And I think that's one thing that many of the brethren have an opportunity to do, is to witness. And their witness opportunities are very great and sometimes quite trying. During our trip, I had mentioned who went on this trip, so maybe I'll just relate who was on this trip. Brother Ernie and Sister Janice Kinsley went on the trip along with their son Chris, Jeremy Zendler, and Sister Nancy and myself. And after Bombay, we took two different paths for a week. Brother Ernie and Sister Janice and Jeremy and Chris went to Madras on the other side of India, and Trichy, Manipari, Antipati, and visit various classes there. But Sister Nancy and I, we ventured on our own and traveled down to a small coastal town called Mangalore. And I know I've heard others mention about their traveling experiences, traveling on faith and traveling not knowing what's going to occur. And Sister Nancy and I, the only language we speak is English. And we traveled down to Mangalore not knowing, you know, who we were going to meet. We knew that we were going to meet Brother Alexander, who doesn't speak English, and we weren't sure how this was going to work out. So anyway, we landed at the airport, trusting the Lord. And as we got off the airplane, walking across the tarmac, one of the airport attendants came up to us. And he said, "Are you Brother Tom and Sister Nancy?" You know, out of blue, here comes someone up to us and says, "Are you Brother Tom and Sister Nancy?" Well, I think we looked different from the rest of the people coming off the airplane. And we said, "Yes, we are." And he said, "There are three individuals waiting for you in the airport terminal." And we said, "Well, thank the Lord." But we didn't know who they were. Well, when we entered into the airport itself, we saw Brother Charles Shores and his wife, Sister Geetha, and Brother Percy. Now, you might not know who Brother Charles and his wife are, but they don't live in Mangalore. They live quite a distance away, like 8 hours or 12 hours, something like that, depending on the buses and the train. It's a pretty good distance. And they traveled back to Mangalore to be our personal guides because they wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to meet the brethren and have this interchange of discussions. Now, a little bit about Brother Alexander. As I mentioned, he's doesn't speak any English or very little, and he's quite up in age, something like 74, 75. But he also came to the airport and waited for us, and we got a chance to meet him. And Brother Charles helped explain a little bit about Brother Alexander's life experiences. In 1947, Brother Jayappa traveled to this small town and met Brother Alexander and spoke to him about the truth. And Brother Alexander was so enthused about this truth that he went out and start witnessing in the town. And traveled throughout the town, witnessing and trying and establishing a class. And his efforts have been very successful over the years. We had a Monday night meeting at his house, and there were 30 that came to that meeting. And for brethren to try to travel to a home in the workday night is quite difficult because they work very late. And then trying to get bus transportation or walking to a home is difficult. But 30 brethren came out, and that was a sweet fellowship that we had. Just the weekend before, they had a convention at his home of 100 brethren. Another story about Brother Alexander. A day after that, we went on a 2.5 hour taxi ride up the mountains to meet Brother Kumar. And you might say, well, 2.5 hours car ride, that's not too bad. That might be like 150 miles, but in reality, that was only like 25 mile trip one way. Well, a little bit about Brother Alexander's. He established this little class with meeting with Brother Kumar, and Brother Alexander rode his bike this long distance once a week to meet with these dear brethren. And the roads were quite questionable when we traveled along. And you can imagine this brother in the 50s and 60s riding his bike. And many of the roads then weren't paved. They were rocks at best, and quite often they were mud or dirt type roads. And in the rainy season, which being on the western side of India, right before the mountains, they caught all the rain from the Arabian Sea. But faithfully, this brother would travel and serve this class. Do we ever consider traveling a short distance to go to a convention or to a meeting too difficult for us? Think about these brethren and their traveling experiences, their desire to travel. While we were up in this mountain resort, we had an opportunity to meet or go to a Hindu temple that was being reconstructed. And like I said, that the influence of the Hindus is quite prevalent. And we went to this temple, and they were reconstructing it. And we saw men laboring at carving out reliefs in the stones and putting the figures of the different gods on these stones to be mounted on the wall. We went down to a river where they had fish. It was, I guess, somewhat tame fish that you could feed them. But these fish in this river were sacred. And it's interesting, as we were standing there, Brother Charles related to us. He said, a continuation of ancient Babylonian religion. When he said that, I started thinking about what it must have been like for Daniel and the three Hebrews being taken out of Israel, their homeland, and transplanted into a Babylonian town, and all the idol worship that was there. What they had was true and sacred, and the nation forsaked it to be within a heathen country, and the influences of the heathen religions upon these people. Well, I think that same experience is given to the Indian brethren to help them also, one, gain appreciation of idols and idol worship, but even to help those of the early times. And we can see this similar type of experience for us. You know, we go to on trips. We may go visit a famous Catholic cathedral, and you look at it, and the world is in awe of the cathedral because of its architecture and its beauty and its painting. But that's what they see, just the surface. They don't see what has caused that building to be built, the labors and the sacrifices of many, many people, especially like in Spain, where the Indians had to sacrifice a lot to make and give to the churches so they can grow and be beautiful. But these are the worldly things that the world appreciates. But when we go to it, we can see and appreciate for what they really are. And we can see the same thing when we look at the Hindu temples and what they represent. And what we appreciate is that their eyes are blinded by this prince of this world. But how wonderful it will be when their eyes will be opened and they see the same things that we see, and we understand the same truth that we are able to see. But without having that experience, we don't gain that appreciation. One more thing I'd like to mention about Brother Alexander is that they don't have much of a retirement capability. But Brother Alexander was able to retire with a little bit of money. But his grandson had developed a very serious illness, and he took majority of his retirement money that he should live off for the rest of his life and spent it on his grandson so he could have a life. So what did I see in this dear brother? I saw a man, from the moment he received the truth, to give all of his life for the service of the Lord. And that touched me. And it helped me think, what have I given? Have I given my all? I'd like to talk about another brother. Moving on to another town called Bangalore. And those of you who were at last year's International Convention, remember Brother Varma, a dear young brother, truly, truly dedicated to serve the Lord. And one of the things that's endearing to me of his service at the International, which I thought was really a challenge for the translators, is that he was relating something, and he decided to relate it in a song, in a hymn. And the poor translators are trying to translate the hymn. I think they gave up on that. But this dear brother is very endearing. And he's ready and willing to witness. Matter of fact, you know, he on his briefcase, he carries the color form of the Chart of the Ages on the cover of his briefcase. And he rides a motorcycle, matter of fact, or motor scooter, I should say. And most of the brethren ride a motor scooter. And if I remember right, on the back of his helmet, it says, "My boss is a carpenter." Jewish carpenter, thank you. And I thought that was very interesting, because it opens some doors. But Brother Varma has had some wonderful experiences witnessing, and had several open meetings One day was a meeting to discuss the Muslim religious issues, one day on Christians and one day on Hindu. It was interesting that he was relating to us that there was a man that came to this meeting thinking that Brother Varma was going to explain the Trinity, because he wanted to know what was the Trinity. You know, he was a Catholic, and he never had this concept explained to him. After the presentation, this man came up to Brother Varma and said, "I thought you were going to explain to me the Trinity, and what you have done is explain to me what the Trinity is not. Thank you very much." He appreciated that. I understand that Brother Varma is now working on translating the volumes, and I know he's very zealous to get that work accomplished. One of the problems that they have with the languages is that, as I mentioned, there are so many different languages. And the two areas of the country that we visited in southern India is Tamil and Kannada, and they aren't close to be able to really communicate one to the other. So quite often what the brothers will do is that they'll take the English volume and they'll read a paragraph and they'll translate it, and they'll have some discussion this way. But not everyone has the volumes to be able to read, and not everyone can read. So it makes it quite challenging to be able to have good studies. But they learn, and they appreciate. And maybe sometimes their studies are a little bit better than ours, because they don't have all the study aids that we have, so they have to learn from hearing, and they have to learn through understanding. Another example I like to give is that Brother Varma's wife, Jackie, had an opportunity to witness to this young lady on the bus. And she, in turn, went home and talked to her sister. And these two young ladies, Maria and Martha, came to Brother Varma's place and had some studies, private studies. Now, they live on the other side of town, and they had to take several different buses to get about an hour's time to get to this, to Brother Varma's home to learn to study. And they had been going so often that their parents began to be concerned. Now, their parents were Catholic, and when they found out what they were doing, they told them, "You could not go." So they wanted to continue to study. So what they agreed to among themselves was that one sister would go one day and another sister would go another day. So they both can have the studies, but it wouldn't appear as if they were going to go together to have a Bible study. Well, after a period of time, they decided they wanted to consecrate, and they did. But the parents wanted them to get married. And then they had to make a decision. Do I get married, or do I remain consecrated? A tough decision, especially when you consider that the young women, if they are, particularly if they're Bible students, but more so if they're Christians, it's hard to find a Christian husband. So quite often, the young women will not get not consecrate until after they marry, and then they'll consecrate and hopefully convert their husband to at least appreciate the truth, if not consecrate. But these two young sisters had to make a decision, and they told their parents that we do not wish to be married, which is quite a trial for the parents, in that there's not a lot of value for the parents of a daughter. And as a matter of fact, it's a burden because you have this dowry that you have to provide. So the sooner you get rid of your daughters, the better off you are. So you see the dilemma of this family situation. The opportunity to witness is always there, as I mentioned. One of the things that I really appreciated in our trips there, and we've been there twice, is that some classes have great opportunities. And one particular class in Knorr has a public meeting every Friday. Every Friday they open their doors to have a public meeting. But some of the classes in the larger towns have a more difficult time of having public meetings, and it's become more so because of the change in government views, which has given a lot of trouble for the classes to have public meetings, because the Hindus wish to convert the Christians back to their own national religion. There was a newspaper article that was written that the government had stated that they had converted 73 in this one village back to Hinduism. And their objective was to convert 100,000 by the end of this year. So the brethren have this conflict with the government in being able to have sometimes permits to have open meetings, or there's open dissension. One of the prayer halls where the brethren meet had part of the sign for the prayer hall broken, and part of it was sprayed over. There's open dissension against the brethren, as well as any of the other Christian religions there. But that doesn't stop them. Their zeal to get the truth out is very important. And, matter of fact, their opportunity to have others consecrate is quite evident. And so I discussed this issue with several of the brethren there. Why do you think the door of opportunity is still open a lot more in India than particularly in the United States? And after some discussion, one of the thoughts that came up that I appreciate was that maybe the Lord is seeking those individuals with their national experience as being part of this bride of Christ to help this presently a billion people, and I don't know how many Indians altogether would have been, but all these people come back and understand, because they would have appreciation and understanding of the cultural issues that we do not understand and can fully sympathize with. One of the things that we had an opportunity to do was to help in observing and conducting some children's classes. And as a little side note, there's a children's tabernacle booklet that is being worked on, and hopefully will be printed by the end of this month. And Sister Nancy had an opportunity to take two of those pages out of this workbook and have little Bible studies. One page was a cutaway view of the tabernacle, and the other was the high priest. And to see the enthusiasm of the children in these Bible studies, something that they can put their hands on and to work with, was really inspiring. But more so, the adults were interested in this these two little handouts. And we know that they are hungering for all types of literature and study aids. The tabernacle is not a particular topic that they study a whole lot. But Brother Charles Suresh saw this and said, I'm going to do a tabernacle study with these classes, because he saw the interest, and if their heart is desiring to understand the basic truths that's presented in the tabernacle, then their faith will be even more sustained. In Kenor, in Karmator is a large city, and it has one of the largest classes. And we had an opportunity to experience a little bit of civil unrest while we were there. When we got off the train, we saw that the whole train station was filled with soldiers. I'd say there was probably about 60 soldiers armed at the train station, and they were checking passengers coming off, and we didn't quite understand what was going on. And Brother Daniel was supposed to pick us up, and our train was late, and we missed each other, and we ended up taking a taxi to our hotel. But later on, what we found out was that a year ago, one of the government ministers came to Coimbatore, and as a result of the conflict between the Hindus and the Muslims, there were 14 bombs that went off during that time period, and 40 people were killed in the hospital because of one of the bombs. So the government was quite concerned about this civil unrest, and that had some impact on our traveling. That night, Sister Nancy and I went to a small town outside of Coimbatore called Putnor, and we had to take a taxi. And a short distance, we had to spend like a half hour in line in our taxi to get through this checkpoint. And we had to have our things open so they can see it. Now, that's something we don't experience or feel in the United States. We could travel anywhere in the United States, into Canada, without major concerns about our welfare or what we're taking with us. But these brethren have to go through these experiences. It gave me an appreciation of our freedoms, and that we should not take for granted those things. But one of the blessings was that because we couldn't go out and meet, we had an opportunity to have Brother Joseph, Brother I.A. Joseph, and I'm going to talk about a little bit more about him in a moment. Him and five young brothers come to our room, and we had the whole day a sweet fellowship. We had some discussion. One of the thoughts that were brought up this weekend was doubts. Are we to have doubts? Well, the brethren in India, they don't ask, they don't say, well, I got a question. They say, I have a doubt. That's how they introduce the question, which, the first time I heard that, I was, oh, what do you mean, you got a doubt? Well, what they're trying to do is understand, their question. So we had an opportunity to really have some very close discussion about many of the truths. And I appreciate, one thing that I really appreciate was that we had a chance to meet with these young brothers 2 years ago. And to see their growth in 2 years really gave me a lot of strength. One brother told us 2 years ago that he didn't want to consecrate until he really understood the cost well, he had consecrated. And one of the services that he has been working, or had worked on, was he and another young brother would spend their Saturdays with Brother Joseph. One young brother would take whatever article, if it's a booklet that came from the States or a reprint or whatever, he would read it in English. Brother Joseph then would take and translate it into their local language, and the other young brother would write it down. And this is how they would do a lot of their translations. And they would refer to Brother Joseph as their walking encyclopedia, because Brother Joseph had such a deep understanding of the truth. The other thing that Brother Joseph was blessed with was that he went to a Catholic seminary before he got the truth. So he had an understanding of the Western mind's thinking as well as the Eastern mind's thinking. So he was able to make that transition to be able to convert the way we write and think into a way that many of the Eastern Oriental thoughts are. It's a difficulty to make that transition. I remember Brother Joseph had discussed with us, he had came up to a Catholic priest and asked him, "Do you understand what you're saying in Latin?" And Brother Joseph was able to, you know, converse in Latin as well as English and many other languages. And the Catholic priest said, "No, I don't understand. I just say these words." So Brother Joseph explained to him what the Latin words were and what they meant and what the truth was. So he was able to give a witness even to those who once taught him. You can imagine what it must have been like for the disciples walking at Jesus' feet and asking questions and hearing Jesus speak of the kingdom of God. That must have been a similar experience that these young brothers felt. What did I see? What did I see? I saw the young people appreciating the truth, making the truth their own, and dedicating their time, their energy to serve the Lord. You know, these young brothers would spend late hours with us, and they would come very early in the morning just to be with us. And we left at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they would be there waiting for us to get up just to be with us. What an example. Another experience that I appreciate is that I mentioned that some of their prayer halls, and they meet in buildings, sometimes in homes, and they call them prayer halls, and each one has its own name. But the prayer hall in Coimbatore was vandalized a couple times. So one older brother spends every night there. His bed is in the outer room, and he stays there to protect the building. Can you imagine us being called upon to spend our free nights staying in our own prayer halls? They have this desire to remember us in prayer. And we tell them that, you know, we remember them in prayer and we pray for them quite often because of their experiences, the culture that they have to live in, their financial situation. But they told us that they pray more for, well, they pray more, but they say, you know, they're more concerned about our well-being in our life of I guess called ease, what appears to them as ease, for our own consecrated walk. Can we get caught up too much in the things of this world because of our conveniences that will distract us from the truth? And that was a sobering thought to consider. They struggled to have a piece of literature, and most of their volumes, the references, are in one place, and usually in the prayer hall. We have information galore. You know, we have on our CDs all the pastor's writings and all that information at our fingertips. Do we take that for granted? Do we take the truth for granted? We can't. The truth is too precious. But they're concerned about us. One of the concerns is that they are somewhat isolated. There are quite a few brethren that will travel to their country and visit with them. But their concern is their disconnect. The brethren in Europe have a lot closer communication and ties with the brethren in the States and Canada. But the brethren in India feel this disconnect and that they're concerned that they'll be forgotten. And they pray to us, do not forget us. Remember us. And how can we forget these dear brethren? They've touched my life, and I know they've touched many of other lives. And if we can't remember them and pray for them as well, how are we going to make our calling election sure? How are we going to reach that fourth quarter mark? I pray that you will not forget any of your brethren, no matter where they may be. If they're across the street, across the town, or on the other side of the world, our Lord has not forgotten them. Let us not forget them either. May the Lord add his blessing and overrule anything said amiss.
Thank you, Brother Tom. We appreciate that very much. It's something that it would be so nice if we all could travel to some of those places and see how the brethren live and rejoice with them and understand. And yes, it would be precious. Anytime you have the opportunity, do so. We want to let you know that our next meeting, which starts at 11:15, it's going to be an hour and a half. It's going to be Carl's talk and a testimony together. So bear that in mind. So guess what we're going to have for him to sing to close with. Anybody have an idea? I'll give you three guesses and two don't count. Hymn number 23, Rising on the Last Verse.